Now, we are actually going live to New York to our American correspondent. Rebecca O'Neill is on the line. Hi, Rebecca.
Good morning, Jen.
Now, we've a load to get through, but there's some breaking news from Harlem. What's going on?
Yeah, that's right, Jen. Police have come out and said that 9 people have been shot in Harlem just up the road here from where I'm speaking to you this morning in New York. One fatally believed to be a 21-year-old man. A mass shooting took place in the early hours. Now, as you mentioned, this is a developing story. The details are just emerging. They still haven't released any pictures or indeed details of what the suspect may look like. They're looking into whether the gunshot victims were at a gathering. Was it a barbecue of some sort? You know, what was going on when the gunfire erupted? A handgun has been recovered and investigators are looking into whether there may have been multiple firearms used in the shooting. So yet again, you know, New Yorkers waking up here to yet another tragic shooting. And actually in D.C. overnight also, a 15-year-old boy lost his life. He was shot to death just under 2 miles from the White House. There was a music festival there, Mochella, a concert. And again, you know, details emerging over that. About this. But, you know, another morning here and people waking up to two fatal mass shootings.
Miami are doing something, aren't they, with regards to weapons. What's Miami doing?
Yeah, so this weekend they announced something quite interesting. It got quite a lot of attention, especially, and this was even before, obviously, the shootings this morning. You know, there's just been such a focus on guns. I mean, look, we all know there are too many guns in America. So Miami have put into play this gun buyback program, and it's actually seeking to send weapons to Ukrainian fighters. So it was organized by the Miami Police Department. They held a gun buyback program. So basically it's a guns for Ukraine, and they were offering people $50 for handguns, $100 for shotguns. If you have a high-powered rifle, such as an AK-47 or an AR-15, you would get $150. So it's not actually the first time something like this has been organized since the 70s here, right? Local gun buyback programs have been billed by police departments as a way to, you know, get dangerous weapons off the street, you know, and it's kind of a, we don't ask you any questions, so you can just rock up and be like, okay, here's my gun, give me my money. You know, it could
Does
be something you've inherited, found, or otherwise. Well, again, I mean, look, you know, who knows, really? It remains to be seen. I mean, it works.
Like, do a lot of people rock
correct.
Up and,
so,
and give me, get money for their guns
yes.
and weapons?
So it has been shown to work, and these things have been successful in that, yes, people do take part. And, you know, the Ukrainian aspect is something that people have really been interested in this, you know, in this regard, and especially with, you know, all the military support that's come from the US. That is something that Americans have been interested in, is getting weapons in the arms of Ukrainians. But I mean, they got at the weekend, so they got 78 weapons in 4 hours. That's how long the event went on. But again, I mean, look, it's unclear. I mean, you can still go out and buy a gun, right? So, I mean, in the long run, who knows?
But
in the short term, you know, it's not enough. But no. I suppose it's just something, you know, that it is on minds here. And there are some people that, you know, want to get the guns out of here.
You're living there, right? And every time we do a report or talk about what's happening in America, there's always a shooting in the story. Do you become a bit desensitized from the whole thing, a bit numb when you hear this news now? It's just another, you know what I mean? Because it's just so regular.
No, you do, absolutely. I mean, I've been here now just over 8 years. Personally, I've been in 2 active shooter situations in the past few months here in New York. You know, you'll get an alert on your phone. One of the time I was in between collecting my friend's kids from school. I had one kid with me, the other kid we were on our way to collect on a bus, as were many, you know, moms on the school run. And it was like absolute panic. And it's really only in those moments where it's personally you that's caught up in it. And obviously, you know, the school shootings do tend to hit a chord more. They will get more focused. But I mean, look, realistically, Jen, as you said, this is something that's just happening on repeat, and you know, all the tropes that come up every time. Oh well, mental health issues, blah blah blah. You know, the gun reform and the legislation that's been you know, put across in other countries works. This is the only country in the world that has this issue. So, yeah, absolutely, you do get desensitized to it unless you're literally in one of those scenarios, which unfortunately you are in all too common, you know?
Yeah. What did you think of Matthew McConaughey's speech about gun control? Obviously, he went to the town where he was brought up, where the last shooting, a mass school shooting was, and he wasn't against having a gun. He said they need to be given to people who are vetted and there needs to be more control, but he didn't say take the guns off the streets and you shouldn't be allowed to buy a gun. What did you make of that? I mean, or what was the feeling of that speech? How did Americans feel about him saying that, such a high profile actor saying something like that?
Well, I mean, it got an incredible response here, you know, from a myriad of aspects. I suppose the thing here that was still, you know, that pull of celebrity is still so prevalent here. I mean, look, that, you know, it's kind of like, God, does it take an actor to go to the White House to get this kind of coverage of the speech, where Biden will do a speech and it will be very hard to get attention? And I, you know, what did come across very much was like, he was a local, you know, he's a gun owner. And the fact of the matter is that people, you know, will... It's about my freedom and my right in the Constitution to have a gun. So, you know, instead of, you know, a lot of the Democrats and the left side of things be like, well, this is ridiculous, we get rid of the guns and then nobody gets hurt, which is obviously where us as Irish people would come from, you know, having the luxury of growing up without them. But it did speak to the swath of the population here that
have
that grew up with them and seen as their rights. So, you know, he did get through to a lot of people that are normally would just switch off Biden and switch off a Democrat. And, you know, I mean, you guys at the top of your show played that, you know, the senator appealing from the floor, like literally on his knees saying, our kids are being sent to school with this hanging over them. Like, come on, what are we doing here? Yet, I mean, how long ago was that? You know, nearly a month on and we're still not seeing anything come. Anything happened.
Yeah, because initially my reaction to Matthew McConaughey's speech was, oh my God, no, just take the guns off the streets. But you're so right. He spoke to the gun owners. He spoke to those people in a way that normally they would switch off. So maybe it was a step in the right direction, the right thing to do. Moving away from guns, which is very difficult to do, but has to be done because there is other stuff going on. The Capitol riot hearings. I have a clip. Let's have a listen to this and then you can tell me who it is talking about Trump pressuring Vice President Mike Pence. Have a listen to this, guys.
The president said, quote, if these people say you have the power, wouldn't you want to? The vice president says, quote, I wouldn't want any one person to have that authority. The president responds, but wouldn't it almost be cool to have that power? The vice president is reported to have said, no, look, I've read this and I don't see a way to do it. To which the president says, no, no, no. You don't understand, Mike. You can do this. I don't want to be your friend anymore if you don't do this.
I don't want to be your friend anymore. So who's that guy?
So that was Representative Pete Aguilar. He's a California Democrat. He was basically just highlighting, like you said, like that quite childish tone of Trump there talking like a middle schooler about not being friends of his friend, his colleague, the actual vice president of the United States of America, didn't support him, doesn't support him in breaking the law and refusing to accept the results of the election. And this is even more sinister when we learned what came afterwards. Now, this is in relation to, I mean, basically the Pence saga, right? It's the latest to emerge from the January 6th committee hearings this week. How Trump waited for 187 minutes in his Oval Office, just watching the absolute chaos on the 6th emerge, doing nothing, absolutely nothing. He sent out a tweet, as one of his aides remarked in her testimony, you know, pouring gasoline on the fire. Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what was necessary. That's the only action he took all day. Wow. You know, and even more worrying than that childish clip that you just played. And again, this is the conversation between the President of the United States and the Vice President talking about illegally not accepting the true results of the election. Mm. You know, and even more worryingly, another rep who was all over the airwaves this weekend, excuse me, Rep. Adam Kinzinger. Now, he's just one of two Republicans who are on this committee. He came out and said in the Sunday shows, you know, that he was actually terrified, right? He's received a mail threat to, quote, execute him and his family. He said there will be violence in the future unless politicians get a grip on telling people the truth. So, I mean, you know, these committee hearings have been going on for the past week, more starting tomorrow, more next week. But, you know, really quite terrifying things coming out with just the more details and the behind the scenes of what actually went on.
What caught your attention? Some of the details. What is it, you said they're just kind of ludicrous things. What, anything come out that you're like, oh, my God?
Well, I suppose, I mean, like, you know, had Pence not rebuffed the pressure, the country would actually have been thrown into absolute chaos. So Pence was under this enormous pressure to do something that he had absolutely no constitutional authority to do. That was reject the electors' votes for president or throw it back to the state. So, you know, the 12th Amendment, the Electoral Count Act here lay out a ceremonial role for the vice president to preside in this process. And it's not one that gives him power to essentially overturn the results of the election. And that's what Trump wanted him to do. Now, had Pence ceded to the pressure, American democracy would have been significantly weakened. And what emerged as well was just the detail, the angry mob, you know, the baseball bats, pepper spray, chanting, hang Mike Pence, one of their own, their vice president. They came within 40 feet of him, his Secret Service detail, you know, the details of hiding him, the details of Trump's phone call to him, where even Ivanka spoke about how she had never heard her father speak in that tone, the absolute abuse he was getting, you know, the gallows that were set up. And then you'd Republicans reacting going, oh, well, people need to relax. They weren't working gallows. Okay, that's really cool that they weren't working gallows, but they were setting up gallows to hang the vice president. You know, I mean, Zoom filters chosen by Jared and Ivanka, nearly distracted from her, basically saying she agreed with the AG Bill Barr in his assessment, you know, that the election wasn't stolen. This was new, you know, her publicly kind of saying that she was going up against her dad, you know. And really, like, there was a confidential witness who traveled to Washington with the Proud Boys, the most prominent of the far-right groups that helped lead the assault on the Capitol. They told investigators that the group would have killed Mr. Pence and Speaker Nancy Pelosi if they got the chance. The video footage of the violence of the Capitol, I mean, it's been 17 months since this all went down, but it really did strike a chord. The committee, to be fair, they've done a great job of, you know, putting it together and making it made for TV. You know, it's been live primetime slots here. You know, and the presentation of all those just awful images, the chaos, the pain of the scenes were undeniable. And then, you know, the VO of Trump saying, talking of the love in the air that day, you know, and really just what's most terrifying is that these lies haven't ended yet, right? You know, they could lead to the degradation of the democratic system. I mean, just last week, there was a county in New Mexico, right? Republican commissioners refused to certify the results of a primary election because they didn't trust their voting machines. The commission now, they did reverse this rejection, finally, only after an order from the state Supreme Court. But I mean, this is just the start of it, you know, and it really is quite worrying when you see Republicans, you know, the primaries are in full swing here, and all these Republicans doing good, running on the, you know, quote, the big lie, on the big steal, and still living in the past and still believing that and saying and running on, if I get into power, I have the power to reject the votes. Yeah. I have the power to reject the results. So, ergo, if I'm a Republican governor and I get into power, which just happened actually in Philly, Doug Mastriano, don't ask your sister about him. I mean, it's just, it's terrifying. A Democrat will be said to win there again because he has a final say in what you call it, like, making, you know, saying, okay, yes, the votes are in, they're counted, this is it. Like, it's
bonkers.
It's pretty wild.
Rebecca, legally, can Trump be tried for anything after these revelations? I mean, is that going to happen?
So basically, the hearings right are to gather facts. The Department of Justice does have authority to bring the charges. So if the charges are brought, then the courts will decide the outcome via jury trial. So this isn't a legal hearing, but it is a, you know, people are hoping, you know, the DOJ, the Department of Justice, Merrick Garland, the AG, they've been saying, you know, we're watching it. You know, the evidence gathered can aid their criminal investigation, you know, and the DOJ aren't prosecuting those who carried out the plot. But look, you know, again, it's 17 months on. There's been allegations or, you know, I suppose, thrown at the AG, like, come on, Merrick Garland, get your act together. Like, are you watching out the clock here? time is ticking. And then there's this whole debate on whether the panel will issue a criminal referral for Trump at the end of all this, you know, but again, potentially consider it politicized, maybe consider politicized, it may backfire so close to the midterm. So really, short answer, who knows?
No, who knows? COVID is back in the news. What's the latest in the US? What's going on over there?
Yeah, so big news for parents this morning. COVID shots have been cleared for kids, but really young kids. So from 6 months old babies to the 5-year-olds. And this has been going back and forth for absolutely ages. For months now, they've been coming really close to it. And then, hang on, you know, we want to be extra careful because obviously it's such young babies. But, I mean, for example, here in NYC, they've already been sending out the emails for appointments. There's going to be shots in arms from Wednesday. So, I mean, in a state like NYC, there's quite support for it. You know, again, with the division in the country, you know, you have to look at it obviously in a state by state level and whether people believe in science and in the COVID vaccines. But here there will certainly be a big uptake in parents bringing their little babies in to get their shots.
Okay, interesting. Well, keep us posted on that. It'd be interesting to know how local parents seem to react to it. Are they, you know, there's a big uptake in New York, but across the country, will there be a big uptake in parents vaccinating their 6-month-old babies? Speaking of which, what is the story with this missing baby who showed up 40 years later?
Yeah, a Texas woman. So this has actually came out just the week before last. It's just absolutely fascinating. So Holly Marie Klaus, she vanished as a baby back in 1980, mm-hmm. along with her parents. Her parents were later found murdered, and she's been found alive and well. So the Texas Attorney General's office were really excited about this. They did a big release and spiel about this because it's just such a fascinating story. So her Holly Marie and her parents. Her parents were Tina, she was just 17, and Harold were 21. They disappeared in Texas in 1980 after moving from Florida. Now, months after the couple went missing, three women dressed in white robes came to Harold's mother and told her that they joined a religious cult, they renounced all family ties. So obviously the mother was completely devastated, and they didn't hear any more. And then remains of a murdered couple were found in a wood in Houston in 1981, but their identities were unknown until last year when their exhumed bodies were identified, you know, with all this modern technology, genetic genealogy, right? But Holly Marie remained missing. And then in another dramatic twist, so she has now been identified. She's a 42-year-old mother of 5 living in Oklahoma, and she was blissfully unaware of her family history. Like, she had no idea. She had grown up with, like, a normal foster family, or she was adopted, rather, and she had no idea about all this until police turned up at her workplace. Can you imagine the police rocking up and going, come here, we've something to tell you.
Oh, my God.
So she's met some of her blood relatives for the first time online, so they've only met online. And bizarrely as well, her paternal grandmother was, like, so shocked because it was actually her dad's birthday. The day that the Texas cops found her was her biological father's birthday. You know, so it was just one of those crazy things that 40 years later, you know, the baby is found.
I hope her parents that adopted her are in the police station being questioned, because it seems that they will be the only people who would know anything, right?
Yes, you think so. But so far, you know, there's still a lot of questions that remain unanswered. So, yeah, they have spoken. They have said that her family that she grew up with aren't suspects.
Okay.
Right? But they
okay.
haven't revealed, like, how they located her. Like, how did she survive after her parents were murdered?
Oh, I can't wait,
you know,
for the Netflix series.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Yes.
But listen, I'm still creeped out by the three women in the white robes knocking on the person's door saying they join a cult. I mean, that is a Netflix series written all over it. Rebecca, thank you so much for the stories and thanks for coming on the show. That is Rebecca O'Neill, a journalist live from New York, giving us all the local news, well, all the big news from the United States.